Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riding from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer, and my good friend Deborah Miro is here, certified Alexander Technique instructor. And today's topic is about a little bit of a carryover from the last episode, where trying to make the scientific information about biomechanics and physics not so scary, more tangible. And it just so happened, I had a client who wanted to buy a horse. So this topic is about how it affects the body. Like it's really, how does this come into lameness? This is where the rubber meets the road. So I'm not sure what to title this podcast,
I know,
whether
right?
it's because we're going to talk about mechanical lameness versus painful lameness for sure. That was what I thought the topic would be. But it kind of expanded into sharing this story
I like
about,
the story.
yeah, I do too. So let's start with the story.
Let's start there.
Yeah. And then it's a story that kind of takes us into the practical, everyday, tangible relationship between physics and mechanics. That's where we're going to end the story. So we will get there.
Stay with us. Stay
Stay with
with
us. It's an interesting story.
us.
So the story starts with a good client of mine who has moved out of state, but we're still in touch. She used to be local. She's out of state. When she was local, I helped her with a horse that was not the easiest horse and not all that safe at first, not even safe to like lunge and do groundwork with, and really pretty sketchy to ride. And she had a lot of balance issues, but she also had a lot of fear issues on top of her balance issues, and they're interrelated. But that's kind of what the combination is that we label as a difficult horse, is when the mechanical coordination is so far off that they feel unstable in their own skin. And that can perpetuate fear. Plus, if people have handled them harshly because of the fear, that compounds the fear with memories of being more scared from people, not just scared about how they feel, right? So all of that is what kind of stacks up into what we call a difficult horse. So there's always a physical coordination component, and then there's sort of the fear level, medium or moderate, medium or high, and then there's the horse's memory of how people dealt with them in the past. And I'm always kind of looking at that whole big picture. And then how do we start to unravel it and build confidence and change movement? So the horse she owned was in the difficult category, right, for those reasons. And she has hung in with this horse, but as an amateur rider, it's really put a dent in her confidence. And she moved from a place where she always boarded her horse in, and when she moved out of state, she bought a farm where she takes care of her own horses. So she's really out there on her own and dealing with this horse in ways that she can be safe. It feels tedious. You don't get to ride as much. Or when you do ride, you're kind of feeling like, can I safely ride my horse? Right? Which is not a great feeling. And so it really shatters people's confidence. And you start to doubt your own riding skills. You doubt that you're doing the right thing by your horse. And so it's a tough situation. So, with that background, this same client contacted me and started sending me videos of horses that were for sale to look at. And I kept thinking, are you going to rehome your horse? And she goes, no, I'm going to keep my horse, but I decided I have room and I'd really like to find a horse that I can ride and feel confident riding. And then I can go, I think I could deal better with my horse. It's a little trickier. And I agree with that. I really agree with that because getting our balance and our confidence is hard enough on a horse that we feel safe to ride. And
Yeah,
so
I
if
can, yeah, I get that because dealing with my big mare, if I didn't have another horse that's, was solid,
safe to ride.
reliable, safe to explore, it would have been much harder. It would, it's like I don't even know if I only had that one horse that was explosive, going out to the barn would be a big deal.
It's a chore.
Yeah.
And it feels like work and it kind of sucks the fun out of owning a horse, right? So I really agreed with my client to get this second horse, but all the videos she was sending me were these young, like super athletic horses. And so I called her and I'm like, okay, let me be clear. What is your main reason to get a second horse? Like, let's get really clear. What is the reason? What's driving you to do that? And what she said to me was, I want to get on a horse and not have to think so hard. I want to get on a horse and just feel like if I don't feel like working on my own balance, we could still ride. I don't have to think hard. I could maybe go out on some trail rides or some little local shows, but I really want to rebuild my confidence and I want to remember why I have horses, just the fun of riding.
Wow.
Right. And I go, great. Once we're clear on that, now we can find the right horse. And I said, every single video you've sent me is not meeting what you're telling me at all. At all. And so then
You
I.
always want, it's like me when I would go to the racetrack to place bets on horses. It's like, oh, look at that pretty one with the four white stockings. Yeah, bet on that one.
I know.
Never win. I mean, it's just like.
Well, that's how I picked my first horse ever when I was 16. I go, he's the right breed, he's the right color, he's the right height. And oh my God, did that start my learning journey? Right? So it was so interesting to kind of pin down, what's your vision? When you get this horse, what's your vision of what you want to do with this horse? And so when she said, safety was sort of number one, rebuilding confidence. So then I go, you're sending me the wrong horses. You're looking at the wrong horses for what you're saying you want. And she goes, well, the second layer comes out. She goes, I want a horse that's not, crippled, lame. I want a decent moving horse, right? And so that's why she's sending me all these videos of these uber athletic 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds. And I'm like, I go, okay, so number one, if you want a safe horse,
Safe, number
safe
one.
horse, number one, nothing under 10 years old. I
Good
go,
point.
that's how long it takes for their brains to come in. So, first of all, nothing under 10 years old. And I said, the problem with that is everything 10 years old and older is going to have a lameness issue. So you have to decide. And that's just the reality of our current horse world right now. It's not a judgment. I'm not blaming. I go, it's just the reality of,
If
because
anything's been in work.
if anything has been working for, 5 to 10 years, if you got your 10-year-old horse, you're going to have some kind of lameness issue.
So
And that brings
I'm a bit
us.
confused. Yeah, lameness. Yeah, let's explore what you mean by lameness in this instance.
So this is what brings us to like sort of the topic I
Yeah.
wanted to talk to
What's
is I go,
truly lame?
we're looking at, there's something like in veterinary or scientific education, they break lameness in veterinary studies into two categories. There's mechanical lameness and then there's painful lameness. Right? So those are the first two categories to look at lameness. So what is mechanical lameness? Mechanical lameness is exactly what you and I work on all the time. That's our specialty, is changing, altering the mechanical coordination of the skeleton to optimize the coordination, right? To use the body the way it was designed to be used. And if we're not doing that, then the mechanical coordination of the body is mechanically malfunctioning or mechanically lame. That doesn't mean the horse looks lame, right?
Oh, no, I get what you're saying. Okay,
So
that makes sense.
the definition of a painful lameness is when the poor mechanical coordination has gone on long enough, or the horse had a sudden injury that
Right.
now the human eye can detect deviation of movement. Right? So before you can have, like when a vet comes, you have on the painful lameness side, you begin with grade one and it goes up to grade five. So you have a grade one, grade two, grade three, grade four, grade five, and each grade has specific criteria that the vets learn, right? To see, to measure or analyze painful lameness. But you can have what's called a negative flexion test, which means the horse, you flex the legs. So if you've ever had a lameness exam, the vet flexes the leg, puts it in, like scrunches up the front leg or hikes up the hind leg, holds it for a period of time, and then you walk or trot the horse off in a straight line. And it's just those first few steps that the vet is assessing that if there's deviation of movement where we see a little lame step, how bad is it? It's either a one, two, three, four, or a five.
I would fail totally.
Most humans, yeah.
At
So,
my age, although I consider myself in pretty good shape, but that, nah, I'm not going to do well on
actually, what you did in through 3 years of Alexander School, when you were studying Alexander technique, you were changing your mechanical coordination. You were overcoming mechanical lameness in your body, right? And then you were optimizing your mechanical coordination according to the inherent design of your body. That's what you do, and that's what I do with horses and riders, right? So whether it's like you're a bit better with the human body than I am, and I understand the horse body a little better, and that's where we come together. So every single person and every single horse on the planet has some version of a mechanical poor coordination, right? We
I
all
like
have it,
that, yeah.
all. So technically, that would be called mechanical lameness. I don't use that term very often because it freaks people right the heck out. So I go, it's mechanically poor coordination.
That's a good way to put it.
It's a softer way to put it than saying,
Yeah.
hey, your horse is
He's
mechanically
lame.
lame. Yeah. I don't use the
A
four-letter
four-letter
word.
word.
Try to avoid the four-letter word.
What?
What? So painful lameness is when we can, with our human eyes, detect deviant movement, something that is not normal movement. And if you think about it, this is one of the deepest problems in our horse industry is human eyes detect as a predator species, right? We are a predatory species, right? Horses are a prey animal species. So if you think about in a herd of horses or zebras or deer or elk or anything, the lion or the predator is going to pick out the weakest link. And how does the predator see the weakest link for dinner? Deviant movement. Right? So horses are masterful compensators. They can rearrange their body and be severely mechanically lane, let's just say that for this podcast, they can be severely mechanically lame and still not show a grade one painful lameness because that is a survival instinct. It's a survival mechanism to be able to rearrange and adapt and not show deviation of movement because it would attract the eye of the predator.
Right.
Right? So, how horses evolved over millions of years was you don't show pain until you absolutely have no other choice, that you've run out of compensation, you've run out of strength, or you've run out of ability, and now it's going to show up. And once it shows up, it's going to be a grade one or a grade up to grade five. Right? So this horse that came in, sorry, I lost my place in the story. A little sidetrack of explaining lameness.
So this is the person that you're bringing in a horse for a pre-purchase exam
Oh, yes.
for the
Okay.
client.
Yes. For this same client, we had this discussion because I said, anything you find, if you want a sound horse, you're going to have to find a young horse, but then you're sacrificing the horse that you don't have to think on and the safe horse that you can rely on. So I said,
Right.
you kind of got to pick one or the other. Any horse over 10 or over is going to have a mechanical lameness, possibly a painful lameness. And the question becomes, is the horse really a safe horse to ride? And how bad is either the painful lameness or the mechanical lameness for what you want to do with the horse? So we're never going to find a perfect horse. Like she wanted a horse that was completely sound and safe to ride. And I go, that's like winning the lottery because those horses don't go up for
They
sale.
don't, and they don't come into our financial category of what we can afford.
I don't think finances have anything to do with it.
Really?
I really don't, because I go, there's a lot of horses out there that fit that category where they are safe and they are sound. I would never sell that horse.
Oh, I wouldn't either.
Yeah. And many people
I
will
mean, I've got
never.
one. I would never sell her.
Absolutely.
But
And
she's 23.
yeah. And I go, nobody is going to sell their best horse.
Right.
So
Unless
all the
for
horses.
unless there's a big trauma or, upset, but
And it's like winning the lottery because the only time I've seen it happen is usually if somebody passes and they die and these horses need a home, you can sometimes find incredible horses because it wasn't really a horse that was for sale. But as soon as you start searching the internet and looking at stuff, horses for sale, you have to decide as a buyer, do I want a sound horse that might be a bit of a struggle to train, right? Or that I might not always feel safe on because the horse is under 10 years old? Or do I want a horse that I feel really safe on and do the lameness issues that I know are going to come with that package? Are they manageable for what I want to do? Right. So, like, there's a local client who picks up ex barrel racing horses for her kids to ride. I go,
There you go.
grade four lame, crippled, right? But she manages their pain levels. She manages their painful lameness issues. But they are bomb-proof safe for her kids to learn to ride on.
Right.
That's why even if the horse doesn't have perfect radiographs, right, has lame disease, has arthritis, has navicular
Yeah,
changes,
all
has
of
an
those
old
things.
bowed tendon, those kind of things. I go, if we're looking for a safe horse and we're not out, we don't want to go Grand Prix. We don't want to go to high levels of competition sports. There's a million horses out there with some lameness issues that are still perfectly good for the job we want.
Or that, what about that term? Maybe this is dating myself, surfaceably sound. I think there was a write up, couple of write.
Serviceably.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, I have a friend who had a horse and it selling it, had a pre-purchase exam, surfaceably sound, in that age category, and came up with some navicular changes on
On the
X-ray.
radiographs.
Yeah, but was serviceably sound. And it that broke the sale. I mean, thinking that an aged body is not going to have some sort of defect, that's hard to find.
You won't find it.
Yeah, it's hard to find. You're going to have some sort of, it's kind of like if you've got a person, for instance, I was in a car accident a long time ago and they did a bunch of x-rays and they go, oh, look at all these bony changes in your spine. You've got stenosis here and a lot. And I'm like, really? I'm not having any pain. I don't know what you're talking about. So
Precisely.
there can be those changes that at that level, that was 10, 15 years ago, wasn't a pain issue or a movement issue,
Not
but the
saying,
changes were there.
no, and that it leads into a deeper discussion we might have to do a podcast on, is that the current paradigm of all of medicine. And I had the same experience. I had a horse pull back when I had the reins over my elbow. I was leading the horse back to after a ride, leading the horse back, and I had the reins over my elbow. And the horse spooked and pulled back and ripped my arm backwards, like really bad. I thought, I tore the rotator cuff or something, right? And with the first set of x-rays to make sure nothing was broken, they go, well, nothing's broken in your shoulder, but you're riddled with arthritis. I was like,
Thank you.
really? They go, oh yeah, it's old and ugly. You're like riddled with
You're
arthritis.
crippled.
And I'm like, really? And so the paradigm is that because I even went to an orthopedic surgeon and got an MRI. None of my tendon ligaments, my rotator cuff was fine. I had no broken bones. And he's like, but you're riddled with arthritis. And I'm like, well, yeah, if you're telling me it's old and ugly and it's been there, I didn't have pain until the horse ripped my arm backwards. So it could not, the pain isn't that. But the paradigm of even in human medicine is if we see pathology, pathology causes pain. And I go,
That's a
no.
sticky wicket,
There's
sticky
a
wicket.
whole, like, there's this vet that gave a lecture I listened to once who goes, no, pain is the precursor to pathology.
Interesting. That's a whole nother
That's a
podcast.
totally different way to look at
Yeah.
it. And so I looked at it and I go, arthritis is my favorite problem to have, right? Because I go, you never change the radiographs, the x-rays are what they are. But that doesn't mean there has to be pain.
Right, exactly. You
Right?
still have functionality, even though the radiographs show something different.
Yeah, the horse I picked up for free with bad navicular changes, and then a year of with somebody else developed ring bone, he was grade three lame without a flexion test on that foot. When I took him, and now his x-rays look no different, but he's sound completely walk, trot, canter. And so I go, but the x-rays haven't changed, but the pain has gone away.
Exactly.
Because, and this is where we can tie into the last podcast, when you change the mechanical coordination, you're altering the impact forces through every joint, every foot, right? Every hoof on the horse, through every joint in the body. You're altering muscle use, you're altering tendon and ligament tensile strength or use. And so when you alter the mechanics and bring them towards mechanical efficiency or optimizing the coordination of the mechanics, you're altering, what do you call it, like shear forces?
You could call it, yeah. I mean, you can look at strain, counter strain, the tensegrity model. You know, it affects everything. It's global.
Yeah.
It's
It's
a
a lot.
global experience, even though you are maybe isolating movement, but it's going to affect global movement.
Yes. And the forces, the invisible forces, when we have mechanical lameness, it turns into painful lameness over time. And this is the cause of arthritis, right? Anything that ends in itis means inflammation,
Right.
right? So inflammation in the joint is going to cause the body to produce more bone in order to find stability and manage the forces of motion coming through that joint the wrong way.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned in the last podcast, David Gorman, Alexander teacher, hand drew an anatomy book and actually put the striations of force on the bones. And that can change those striations. He just did the way he thought it was, but those striations come in with force. And use is how those, even the mechanics of the striations of the bones.
Exactly. So the
Right.
horse I took with navicular changes in ring bone, if I didn't change how he was coordinating his spine, going
Right.
back to the axial skeleton as the director, the primary line of the entire body, as I changed and helped him better coordinate the functions of his spine, that changed the concussive load going to that right front foot in his case, right? So by altering the coordination of the axial skeleton, I'm changing the forces, the concussive forces that are going through all four legs. I'm
Right.
changing the muscle use throughout the entire body. I'm changing the tensile pressure on every tendon, ligament, even the fascia. I'm changing the altering the range or how the joint is coordinating, right? How the joint is actually going through its range of motion or receiving force. Is the force coming through the joint ideally, or is it shearing off to the left, to the
Oh,
right,
that's a
to the
big one.
front, to the back?
That's a big one.
Right. So poor coordination of the spine is going to have a direct impact on the forces affecting the joints and the forces all the way down to the feet. So it's going to affect
Yeah.
leg placement, head and neck use, and how the forces are traveling through the body during motion. Right. So as long as we're still at a level of mechanical lameness, and we don't yet have a painful lameness, we can improve the mechanical coordination and keep our horse sound.
I think that
Right.
really stresses a point to me is that our eyes can't see. We're always looking at the legs for quote unquote lameness issues. When I think the important thing for me to hear is that it really begins in the back.
It depends on what you're doing.
Really.
Because I would agree from the farrier's perspective and from the vet's perspective, they're there to give your horse pain relief and support how the horse is moving
Right.
without thinking about changing the movement. And in that instance, both the farrier and the vet are going to look at lameness always from the hoof up.
That's a good point.
They're going to start at the bottom of the leg and work their way up, right? When you get up to kissing spine or deep neck issues or sacroiliac issues, nobody can help you, right? And I go, I can help you because that's a training issue. And in
It's a
training,
movement issue,
it's a
yeah.
movement issue. So in training, good training is working from the top down. Vets
That's a
and
good way to put it.
farriers are going to work from the feet up. And as a trainer, I'm going to work from the spine down. Right? And so, and that, when I work from the spine down and I change the forces or the force management that's going through the joints, through the tendons, ligaments, and to the feet, my farrier knows how the horse is going by the way the feet grow every 6 weeks. My vet says, oh, okay, this flexion test, even though the x-ray hasn't changed, your horse is now flexing sound. Negative, ne negative on the flexion test is what they say. So you don't need the pain meds anymore. We don't need to do the injections anymore. But if I have pain, I need the pain relief in order to change the mechanics,
Good
right?
point.
And I need a good farrier who isn't going to make my problem worse by screwing up the angles of the feet.
Excellent point.
Right.
That's a whole nother topic.
So I need the training, the vet, the farrier. I need that whole, I need those three perspectives on the same horse. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So to continue my story, here's an example of this. We finally find a horse that is really safe. And what was so cool is the owner of this horse. She's a jump rider, stadium jumping. And she got this horse who had an amazing show record for jumping, right? And she noticed when she was jumping him that he wasn't quite pushing off to the jumps the way he should. So she didn't do a pre-purchase when she took the horse. She just went off his show record. And she took the horse to the vet finally. And when they did the flexion tests, he was pretty lame. They did some x-rays and they found really gnarly, bad hock arthritis on both hocks, right? So they injected him that day to give him some pain relief, but they basically said he can only jump a meter or under. And she
She
does
wanted
upper
to do bigger
level
than that.
stadium jumping, right? So she goes, I need to rehome this horse, right? To somebody. Who, but she goes, my problem, her problem was as a seller, I thought this was fascinating, is everybody who came to look at the horse was looking at his show record. And everybody who was interested in him, who could ride him over jumps, wanted to inject him every 3 months and figured they'd only get a year or two before he was wiped out.
They wanted to do the same thing.
And so she just said, you can't buy my horse, right? Because he's such a kind horse. And then she found this lady I'm working with who wanted a safe horse and doesn't want to jump, right? Because she said, if you jump this horse, he can become quite strong, which, okay, I get it. If he has hock arthritis and pain, he's going to get really strong over jumps, right? So somebody who wanted a safe horse couldn't jump him. And somebody who wanted to jump him was going to cripple him. And so these two people connected. It was beautiful. I love it when things come together like
Yeah, it
this.
takes a while, doesn't
Yeah. It's like one of those moments you go, okay,
The
I'll be
stars
involved.
aligned.
The stars aligned.
Yay.
So the owner actually dropped the price because she found someone who was going to try to keep this horse comfortable. And not tax these hocks anymore, right? She just wants it for maybe, lower level dressage, trail riding. And really, her main purpose is I want a super safe horse that I can rebuild my confidence on, right? So we still did a PPE, a pre-purchase exam on this horse to kind of get a gauge of how bad is it, right? Am I going to have this horse over time? Is he kind of fixable? And so, even though his hocks were injected only a month ago, when we did the flexion test, he was a grade three on the left hind with a looseness in the stifle plus the hock arthritis. And he was like a grade one on the right hind. right? So that made everybody a bit nervous because he just had the injections. But when we put him on the lunge line, walk, trot, canter, you couldn't see a single lame step. He was actually a really nice mover. So you couldn't see it unless you did the flexion test, right? So then when I worked with him, what I found as a trainer in his coordination, the hindquarter, first of all, he wasn't engaging correctly and using his back. So he was jumping a little hollow, which was what the wear and tear was on his hocks, right? So I
That
go,
makes
okay,
sense.
we can change that. And then here's how the coordination and the physics tie together in this specific instance is when I worked with him and rode him, it was his right hind leg that was underused. It felt restricted. It was stiffer. He didn't want to bring it under as far. He had a hard time balancing on the right hind leg, which was the more sound leg in the flexion test. So the left hind leg, which was not only the hock, but now starting to loosen up and wreak a little havoc with the left stifle, right? Hock and stifle on the left leg. I said, that's because that's where he's putting his body weight, right? So
It's
the
kind of like left-handed people, right-handed people.
exactly.
Yeah.
So the problem that I'm going to address through training is to restore the function of the right hind leg. That's going to change the concussive forces and the chronic weight bearing through the left hind leg,
Right.
right? That's how he's going to become sound again. Right. And she doesn't want to jump him. She doesn't want to do anything fancy. So when I rode him, the question in my mind, whether or not he was the right horse for her, is if I ask him to use this right hind leg or use both legs more, and I don't let him just move the way his habit is,
Right.
some horses can have a pretty negative reaction. That can scare some horses.
Right.
Or if it was going to create pain, that horse would tell me through behavior and energy. But if the horse liked it, we were golden. I go,
Right.
that's a horse that the training will be safe, whether you're good at it or not. The horse will enjoy the process of healing. So you get to ride while you restore better mechanical function. Her other horse, when you ask that horse to change her movement, it scares her a bit.
So she
She's
gets explosive
skeptical of
or,
it. So she can get
yeah,
resistant, she can get
right.
anxious, she can get spooky. And that's the difference between these two horses. Both
Right.
of them really have significant mechanical lameness. One of them has a gradable painful lameness. But his coordination is actually a little bit better than her difficult horse, even though her difficult horse doesn't have a painful lameness.
Well, that makes
And I
sense with
just find that
humans, yeah.
so fascinating.
It, because if we go into that fear-based mode, that's a really hard place to function from and make changes.
You can't.
Yeah. So to get the horse to a place where they trust, or person for that matter, that they are trusting the process, that, yeah, this is, I feel like this is going in a positive direction. Then the change is awesome.
You have to feel safe
Yep.
in order to change habits of movement. So when we're talking about coordination, that's just a program, a software program running through the nervous system. So we could say movement is a habit, just like you're saying, left-handed people, right-handed people, we tend,
Dominant, yeah.
or we tend to walk on our heels, or we tend to walk on our toes.
Right.
It's like all those things, those are habits of movement established in the nervous system. And as you and I know firsthand, when you monkey around with those habits, it's really disorienting at best
Yeah.
from the inside
From the
perspective.
inside. On the
Yeah.
inside. Yeah, it can bring up a lot of stuff.
And at worst, it can create, it could be scary or maybe even painful.
Right,
I'm
growing
gonna,
pains, I call it.
yeah. And so those changes are a deep part of the individual, whether it's horse or human. It's like that's those habits of movement are how we know where we are in time and space. And so when you monkey around with mechanical coordination, you're not only altering how we organize the forces of motion internally, externally, doesn't matter. We're changing the forces of motion or the physics of balance. And our response to that is completely unique and unpredictable.
Yeah, because I've had say experienced golfers, and I start playing with them around their golf, and some of them are very open to that change, and some of them just shut down and say, "Oh no.
Don't
Nope,
touch
my
that.
golf, don't
Yeah.
touch that. My golf game's fine."
I've spent thousands of dollars on
Yeah,
that
I'm
swing.
good.
Don't mess with it. Yeah.
Don't mess with it. So it's very interesting, and I'm sure horses are the same way. You get some that are like, "Oh, well, that's a different idea. I could flow with that." Or they can go into fear, they can go into anger, they can, same thing with people.
I've had horses literally spook when they make a kind of a sudden or big change that we've been working on in the coordination for weeks and weeks, and suddenly something in the body shifts. And I've had some horses have a pain response and send me flying, or they blow up. I've had other horses that just spook, right? And then I've had other horses that go, "Oh my God, I've been waiting for that
Yeah,
for 10
forever.
forever. Thank you. Thank you." And they just go into this deep relaxation. And so
Yeah.
to determine if this horse would be the horse for my client that she wants is she's going to have to change this horse's coordination, or she's buying a horse that she can only ride for another year. Like if you don't change it, these hocks are at a point where you can only manage the pain for so long. You have to change his coordination at this point if you want to have another 10 years out of this horse, right? And so if we don't change the coordination, and that's what scared her from the vet's perspective, you're looking at hock injections, 3, 6, 12 months. You're looking at expensive supplements and pain management, right? And so she's worked with me long enough that I said, it's going to be expensive up front to manage the pain, but the faster we can change his coordination, the more we're relieving what caused the arthritis,
And
right?
we can go back to, I think we did it a long podcast ago about my big mare and her diagnosis of her neck.
And the neck arthritis,
Yeah.
absolutely.
I mean, and it all came back on us. We worked together on, man, we've really got to figure out how to help this horse manage herself so she stays out of pain.
And changes,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah.
No, and we did X-ray the left stifle on this particular horse just to see what it looked like. Zero arthritis, clean as a whistle.
Interesting.
But the vet could feel the looseness of
The
the
chain
right
the
to the left, and she was concerned about it. And I thought on the flexion test, again, everybody sort of assumed from the radiographs that the grade 3 lameness on the left hind was due to the hock arthritis, right? But he was only grade 1 on the right hind. And when I asked the vet, I said, "Was the left hind worse arthritis?" She said, "No, the arthritis was really pretty equal between both hocks. Not, one was not significantly worse than the other. They were both, pretty gnarly, but they were
Right.
pretty equal in their bony changes in the pathology." And so I went, aha, he was more lame on the left because the stifle is starting to have a pain issue.
So he's getting multiple stress points instead
Because
of just one,
if you
right?
don't change the balance and
Right,
start
you get
to
more change, negative changes in other places.
right. So even though the hock
Yeah.
arthritis was more equal, right, which makes sense as a high level jumper, probably ridden by very good riders, he might have jumped a bit hollow, but one hind leg wasn't super, it wasn't asymmetrical stress between the two hind legs. It was pretty symmetrical stress. But then he's now starting to show he's not in work, right? He's not doing his job. So more pasture time and more flat work time. Now his left-handedness is showing up, right? And so now the left stifle is showing pain and signs of stress, but the x-rays are still clean. That's mechanical lameness. That's
Yeah.
mechanical lameness, right? That was actually to the point of being gradable. But I found that so fascinating. I go, if the hocks were equal in their pathology, but you had significant lameness on the left hind compared to the right hind, that's what I'm freaking talking about when I go, pain is the precursor to the pathology. It's not the pathology that's causing the pain. So the
Right. I
gnarly,
get it now.
yeah, the gnarly little bony changes on the x-rays that scare the pants off of everybody. I go, you can have those and still be pain-free.
And
That's
still fun.
you. That's me. That's my
Function.
horse. Right?
Yep. We're
I
doing
go,
good.
or you can have pain, which was this horse's left stifle, but no change, no pathology, like no bony changes, no signs of arthritis, beautiful, clean bones in the stifle.
Yeah, well, that kind of goes back to your knee pain if you think about
Oh, I knew you were going to say
it.
that. Yeah.
Because that was just your symptom. That
Yes.
wasn't the cause.
Wasn't the cause.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
It's
was
just
the.
what we tend to focus on because that's what our minds do. But it's not the cause. It's the functionality of the movement has to change the pain level.
No, and horses' hocks are very much like it's not the equivalent to the knee. So a horse's stifle has the patella and the condyles, and the horse's stifle is technically the equivalent to the human knee. But functionally, like you've pointed out, the knees in the human take the brunt between any imbalance. It's like the middle joint between the hip joint and the ankle.
Yeah,
So if the
it's
hip joint isn't functioning correctly, it can come out at the knee, the pain. Or if
right.
the ankle isn't functioning correctly, matching the use of the hip joint, then the knee is the one that's sort of the weak link, right? And
Right.
functionally for horses, the hock is such an interesting joint because
Yeah, it is.
it has five bones. And every time that joint flexes, folds, and extends, straightens, there's also the upper two bones rotate right while the lower two bones rotate left, or vice versa. So there's this twisting, just
The
like our
shearing.
knees, there's a bit of a twisting action in forward motion. And so hock arthritis is like every horse probably has some degree of hock arthritis, just like a lot of people have issues with their knees. It's just that common.
Right.
Okay. And so for a horse that isn't competing at a high level or taking big jumps, hock arthritis is not a big deal.
Right.
Right. And to me, it's an easy fix because if I change the coordination of the spine, and when I rode him, sure enough, I think we've talked about rotation before. As soon as I would put him on a right turn, his whole barrel rolled off to the left so strongly that I was perched on the right edge of my saddle to be balanced. Right? So that's the right hind not functioning. That's the overloading of the left hind. That's the whole body weight and skeleton shifting
Shift.
left, which tightens the whole body on the right. And I go, so there's the interplay of mechanics and forces. And that's why we have to learn about a little bit of this science-y stuff because it helps us understand what's going on. Like this
Right.
arthritis didn't come from nowhere.
Right. It's the sheer of over time of misuse.
Yeah. And just like we do to ourselves, we associate it with age. That, oh, it's just part of getting older. And I go, I've met so many people who, I've met young people who act like they're 90, and I've met 90-year-olds that are still moving like they're in their 50s. Like I go, it's just,
That makes sense.
yeah, it's the movement, not the age.
I
It's,
agree.
yeah. And I'm so glad we sort of like, if we call it what it actually is, technically and scientifically, when we have poor coordination, or our horse has poor coordination in motion of especially the spine, the primary axis or the axial skeleton of the body, then we're changing the physics. We're changing the weight distribution internally throughout the body. We're putting different forces through every single joint that might not be ideal, right? That small repetitive, it doesn't mean we're not functional, but it's the small repetitive wear and tear over time that creates the pain and then the pathology. And that's why we associate it with age, is because it takes a while for that to happen. So I'm actually, because my client is out of state, I'm going to be videotaping her horse's progress. And so I may,
Yay!
yeah, I may share some of that on YouTube if you guys watch the
Might be
podcast on
fun.
YouTube, or if you don't watch the podcast on YouTube, if you're finding this someplace else, the channel is Kirsten Nelson, all lowercase, on YouTube. And I
Oh,
think,
cool.
well, I always put it in the description box.
Oh, good.
Oh, no, I don't. If you're on a regular podcast, it would be in the notes, or your website is optimalposture.org,
Dot org.
and my website is kirstennelson.com, which is hard to spell correctly. So I also have, because it's KirstenNelsen.
All E's. That's
All
how I
E's.
remember. It's
Yeah,
just
all
all
E's,
E's,
except the I.
except
And
the
so, and my other website is wexfordtraining.com. That's easier to spell.
I.
WEXFORD. So I'm going to try to, it probably won't be right away, but I'm going to try to post some, like, document this horse while he's here in training that we've just
That'd be
talked
cool.
about. Yeah. Because he's actually a beautiful and talented horse. Like, for his lameness issues, the suspension he has at trot, the way he's able to mask this, I was like, he's just got a lot of talent in there, but he hasn't been developed with skills on top of talent.
Right.
So by 10 years old, he's now considered a lame horse who can't jump anymore, which I find is sad. But it makes the perfect
Or
horse
somebody
for
else.
somebody else. Yes. So that's the end of the story, but the beginning
The
of his,
beginning of the new
the
story.
beginning of the new story.
Yay.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us, everybody. I think this was a long podcast. We better wrap it up. And we look forward to seeing you next time on the Horse Geeks
Bye, everybody.
podcast. Bye.